This week on Barbell Shrug, we interview former UFC heavyweight champion, Boss Rutten. He's going to teach us how to win a bar fight.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson. We have Andy Galpin with us. From Dr. Andy Galpin from Cal State Fullerton.
Right.
He was on episode, which one?
CTP?
19.
Episode 19 he joined us. So we're back out in California and he decided to jump in with us. And he's introducing us to Mr. Boss Rutten.
Pow!
A.K.A. El Guapo.
El Guapo.
That's right.
That's it.
You'll probably, by the end of this podcast, you're going to want to go online and just YouTube Boss Rutten and just watch him beat the snot out of people watch him teach you how to win bar fights and all that kind of stuff. This is why we have him on the show. He's an entertaining, hardcore dude from the Netherlands.
And if anybody's not familiar, you can look at the wall right there and see Boss's big UFC heavyweight title right there. He was one of the first UFC, and he was actually the logo.
You know, the thing is, no, that's a myth. You know,
is
it starts
really?
Creating really fast. What I did find out, like just 6 months ago or something, that I was actually the first heavyweight champion. Because it was before it was no weight classes, then they created two weight classes, 200 and under, 200 and over.
Right.
And then I became the champion. So they said, you know that you were the first UFC champion.
I thought,
they go, really?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
All right, before we get too far into it, make sure you go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we'll notify you when we're doing cool stuff like this.
Da, da, da. There you go. All right, so Boss, can you give everyone in the audience that doesn't know who you are and doesn't follow MMA, because it's mostly cross with people that listen to this podcast, kind of your background and kind of where you came from, especially like when you were younger and you weren't quite the UFC champion type. When you were a little kid, and then kind of talk about how you got through your whole career.
Wow, we have some time here, right?
We do.
Okay, in a nutshell, and it's still going to be long. I was covered in eczema, and that went away for some reason. At 4, I got rheumatic fever. At 5, I stayed in the hospital for 4 months for rheumatic fever.
Jeez.
Which they thought it was something way worse. This was actually the best outcome for me. Then at 6, I moved to a little village, Valkenswaard. I don't even want to spell it. And there I my asthma came up and eczema. I was covered in eczema everywhere in my face and my hands. And if I didn't have eczema, I had asthma real bad. Would lay in bed, not able to eat because I couldn't breathe. You know, but I at the time already, I was always an athlete. My whole family from my dad's side of athletes. So I did track and field. We had also a forest in our pretty much in front of our home, which it was a huge forest, and one row of trees would go to that forest. I was able to jump in the first tree, swing from the top, go to the other one. Mm-hmm. Then at the end, I had to jump on a horse stable. That was the only way I had to jump down one time. Then the next tree, when I would go in, I could pretty much go through the whole tree. That was my way of dealing with myself, because nobody wants to hang out with me, of course, because of my disease. They think it's contagious. And if bullies came, I just climbed in a tree, and then I let them climb, and almost when they were there, I started swinging, and I went to the other side. So I did that pretty much every day, all day, climbing on rooftops. I wanted to be Spider-Man. That was my hero, Wolverine and Spider-Man.
Do they have a Dutch Spider-Man?
No. Yeah, actually, when you read it, yes. But it's still a twit when he shoots a web. Twit. You see, so they keep the sound the same.
So you were getting bullied a lot when you were a kid?
Yeah, I did. Just outcasted more. But it didn't really bother me, because I really lived in the trees. I really liked it there. You know, I had a home tree, which was a tree with like 5 big branches starting at one point, and I was always there. I would eat acorns. I was the weirdest kid ever.
You were like a human squirrel.
It was, I loved it, you know, by myself, jumping around, doing all the stuff. And when track and field started, I realized that I did really good at track and field. You know, I still hold some records there, actually, from when I was little kid, I hear. And I started getting good at high jump, javelin, discus, shot put. So I said, hey, decathlon. At that time was Bruce Jenner. I wanted to become the Dutch Bruce Jenner, you know, the Olympic gold medalist. What I realized is my running was not so good, of course, because of my asthma. And then, but I realized every time after an asthma attack, if I had an asthma attack, I would, for some reason, if I restarted my track and field, I would run better. And I'll talk about that later. That's how I created an idea for a lung training device, actually. Anyway, it went on. I started growing out of my disease around 17. Had two other guys that got bullied. We all became friends. One guy had a big head. The other guy was a fat guy. We all started training. He became stronger and stronger. Actually started boxing, putting on some fights. The other guy started growing. So he became tall, so the head, proportion-wise, was now okay. And we became the champions. We are the champions, we would shout, you know. And we had a list of people that we didn't like, who all bullied us. And we just go up to them, you know, smack them in the face. And that was it, you know, not really beat them up. You know, sometimes just a smack, boom. You know where that is for, you know. Okay.
But this is after you knew martial arts, or this is before
you
started?
No, this is before
learning
martial arts. Okay. Because when he started boxing, I started slipping into his boxing classes also. My parents are very against martial arts. They think it's violence. I actually, this is, you see, it's hard to keep track of all the stuff I did. I was 12 years old, I saw Bruce Lee, and I believe it was in 76, in 77, in France, on a holiday, and I saw Enter the Dragon. And I go, that is the answer. If I'm like him, nobody's going to mess with me anymore. So then I begged for 2 years to finally let me do Taekwondo at the time. There was a Taekwondo, and my neighbor, she was a very pretty girl. She had a tough boyfriend. He was Taekwondo, kind of took me under the wing. And I went to the gym there. And then within 6 weeks, 2 months, I was beating up the brown belts there, you know, the grown-ups. Mm-hmm. And I heard the grown-ups talk about me. So my confidence started getting bigger. And then I got in a fight with the biggest bully in town. Shaki was his name. And they came all on their bikes, and they said something. And this time I said something back. And they started laughing. They turned around, and I just stopped my bike, put it on the stand, and I was just waiting. And then the toughest guy, he walked over to me and started hitting me in the chest, you know, the bumping chest I was at the time, the kids. And I dropped him one shot. Boom, he's out. Problem was, his nose broke. So I had to go to the hospital. Police showed up at the front door. No more martial arts for Boss. And then at 21, I moved out of the house, and I mean, the next day I signed up. Mm-hmm. Taekwondo, yeah. Then I realized, oh, no low kicks, oh, start karate. And then I said, okay, but I want to also kick the head, let's do Thai boxing. So everything I started doing pretty much at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the Thai boxing, my first class, got introduced to the liver shot, which later became my trademark, you know, hitting the body with the right side of the body.
Yeah, I just like hearing you say
liver shot.
Right through the liver.
If I say liver shot, a lot of people drink a shot, so liver shot, liver shot, liver shot. I gotta drink four now.
Shot to the liver.
Yeah. Gotcha. And that's pretty much it. I started Thai boxing, racked up a real good record, really fast, really soon. A lot of knockouts. First round, everybody went down, and only one second round. You know, and I start doing shows, then I start bouncing, and after, yeah, I'm telling you, this is a story, it's quite a story. 4 years of bouncing, which is not good for your stamina, I want to say, because in Holland, they close at 5, and then the bouncers go out.
Oh,
you know, so it's not the healthiest lifestyle we had. And then apparently, at New Year's, I said yes to fight this really good guy who was in prison, who came out of prison, Frank the Animal Lotman, was like 51-0 with like 47 knockouts. And
it was kickboxing?
There was kickboxing, okay. Thai boxing. And then they called me in February, I remember. And they asked me where to send the posters to. And I go, what posters? He says, from the fight. I said, what fight? He says, your fight. I said, who am I fighting? Frank Lotman. I said, who said that? You know, he said, you said that. I said, when? He says, the New Year's. I was drunk, dude. I don't even remember saying this. But I thought everybody's going to say, oh, he's afraid. Since I had a lot of knockouts. I go, okay, the guy was in jail, maybe, you know, but he was an animal. And it didn't go well. I ran out of gas. I had to stop at the first round, and I got a lot of negativity from older people. You know, you see, I always told that he couldn't fight. So I was kind of done with it. I fought another guy, also same deal here, long story. They released me from jail a day before the fight. That's also not a smart thing to do. And not, I wasn't in jail. I was at the police station because a friend of mine got really beat up. He had his jaw saw together, so we went looking for the guys who did it. You know, and that, of course, when something happened, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I lost that fight also because of stamina. I dropped him though three times in the first round, but then I couldn't come out in the second round. Mm-hmm. Then I had another fight, and we're looking for the footage right now. You have to see this to believe it. We're fighting, and this guy's name is Rene Rosa. I think Ryan maybe knows him. He's a tall guy, and he's known as a dirty fighter. And I beat the crap out of him in the first round, right? So first round is over. Second round, I come out, and I go, bam, bam, hit him again. He's very tough. And he's in the clinch, and he starts biting my ear. Ooh. And I go, let go, man, let go. Now, I brought all my bouncer friends from the south. Mm. He brought like the Hells Angels and his bouncer friends from Amsterdam. Mm.
And there's Hells Angels in Amsterdam?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was an American thing.
No. They're Europe, and they're heavy dudes in Europe, dude.
Wow.
So this guy keeps biting, and I tell him, I said, let go, let go, let go. And so in the fight, you see me loading up my knee, and I go full in the pills. The guy goes up 2 inches. He goes down. I tried to hit him again, but the referee already pulls me up. Everybody starts fighting. They throw a chair in the ring. It bounces on core hammers. This is the best. It bounces on my trainer's back.
Yeah,
it flies over me, and it lands on four legs. And you see me, I saw the tape. You see the fly, ding, 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 ding. It lands, and I look back. I sit down in the chair, and everybody's fighting. It's hilarious. And suddenly, our guys are standing there. You know, it was like so. Everybody was against me. They didn't know what he was doing. But then they saw my ear. He actually bit straight through my ear.
Yeah.
So as I did, look at my ear. He bit in my ear. So then everybody calmed down, and they knew why I did it. Mm. Anyway, that was it for me. Didn't want to Thai box anymore. Started doing mixed martial arts shows on music on TV, but we started in a, how you say it, in a disco or in a nightclub, and then we would be the act at midnight. Mm-hmm. And we would come up and did all the cool stuff with nunchucks and sticks and bows and break test, and I would kick cigarettes out of his mouth and cups off his head. I was spinning back kicks, jumping, you know, and that caught on, and suddenly we started doing it for bigger events, and suddenly we asked for a European TV. We started traveling, went to France, did shows over there, and on one of those shows was Chris Dolman, who is a guy from Rings, was an organization in Japan, and he saw me. You know, we would walk up with a cartwheel and then an arabir and a flip flop, and then that's how we would walk up to the ring. He says, dude, you guys got some crazy abilities, you know. Did you ever think about free fighting? That's what they called it at the time. Well, I would like to check out. I went to check out a class. I got destroyed. I had to stop my car next to the road and call my wife. I said, listen, I'm in the car. I'm sleeping. When I feel better, I come. Okay. She's laughing. And the next day, she said, oh, so that's it for you. I said, no. I said, I'll get back there. Within 3 or 6 months, I cleaned that whole clip out. You watch, you know, so because I had revenge on my mind. Got a few injuries. Suddenly got a phone call. And the phone call was Chris Dolman. Boss, you got to jump in the car. There's Japanese people here looking for a new organization, for fighters for a new organization. And it was weird because I never picked up my phone and the answering machine wasn't working. But for some reason, I picked it up, jumped in the car, went to Amsterdam, got in a brawl with one of those Rings guys because they were filming. So he wanted to hurt me, I guess. So I knocked him out with a high kick. But it really cool. It was a high kick and it had a big lip of stitches here. So he had to go to the hospital. And I saw those Funaki and Suzuki were there. Mm-hmm. And I saw them pointing at me. And I was in. And I think 2 months later, this is in, it just happened, September 21st. September 21st was that was 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I fought there.
So
dropped a guy, put him in a coma for 2 days. And the next day, people start bowing to me on the street. It was the wildest thing, putting babies in my hand.
You're a hero.
It was the craziest thing. I beat up a Japanese guy and everybody loved me. It was like unheard of. In Holland, you do that.
Right.
You better get security. They're going to try to kill you.
I think the super interesting thing about bosses, you were one of the first people to start training in multiple. And this is sort of where your story was going. It was you were really good at kickboxing, and then when you started fighting these guys that were wrestlers and whatnot, you had problems. So.
Yep.
One of the first people to incorporate that, and I believe one of the first people to incorporate strength and conditioning and things like that into your program stuff, and so really a game changer of changing. I think this is sort of the same thing with a lot of CrossFitters, is having a problem. So how do I train for this and this and this, and I got to get my boxing in and my wrestling in and my lifting and my cardio and stuff like that, and you are absolutely one of the first guys to sort of pioneer that type of stuff in the MMA stuff.
The only thing I didn't do, and I think that made my career a little longer, was the wrestling. So I figured if I just become really good on the ground, you know, after my last loss against Ken Shamrock, I started getting, I had no training partner. You have to understand, I trained on the back for the first year and a half. You know, I would spar my own student. I do two times a day, 12 rounds on the back, as hard as I could. So when I would spar my students, I would think I would jab them, but they would drop, you know. And I go like, so I didn't really want to, you know, hurt anybody. Yeah. Then after the last loss, I get very vocal. I found this one guy, Leon Van Dyke, and he was an incredibly strong kid. He did 125 kilo curls.
What?
And I talk about 280 pounds or something. Bizarre strong. If I would get him in an arm bar, I literally had to do everything in my power because he would simply curl out.
Yeah. I know what that feels like.
Yeah, that was
that's right.
But, you know, and we started training. And thankfully, he was 19 years old, picked up really fast as well. And we were just watching tapes. Just watching fights, watching tapes, and trying to make it better. Mm-hmm. You know, because I saw the gi, I thought the gi, you know, that's a lot of restriction. So maybe there's room for improvement here, room for improvement there. Mm-hmm. You know, I would get him two times in the submission, three times in the same submission, then he would know the setup. So then I created a different setup and did the same thing again happened. So I created another different setup. And then I start jumping those different setups from one to three, three to two, boom, and then suddenly one hit. You know, and then we started doing it with everything. And my whole house was full with little post-its and combinations, and it was like I got totally sucked into the ground game. And then I won my next eight fights by submission. You know, one of them was by decision against Frank, but I controlled it with my submission game. So now it was like, whoa, well, what are we going to do now? We're going to stand or we're going to go to the ground with the guy. That was my changer in life, in MMA.
What were you guys doing for strength and conditioning back then? Were you just going for runs or do you lift weights at all?
You know what? I everything I came up myself. I was so stupid. Like, if I never food, I never did. I used to do 9 1-arm pull-ups. Like, I was just really strong at the time. I could eat whatever I wanted. It was the weirdest thing. And I overtrained myself one time, went all the way to 4% body fat. Like, I passed out doing rounds on the back because I didn't know that you have to, when you rest, you actually get stronger. So I trained every day, two times a day. Yeah. Every
day.
That
seems ridiculous.
So I started eating myself
up. That's common, yeah.
So then when I found that out, I suddenly got much more stronger. I go, whoa, this is crazy. And then I start incorporating everything high repetition, 30 seconds or 50 seconds. We had a 12 systems, 12, how do you say,
circuits?
Stations.
Yeah.
Right.
And I would do for 50 seconds. We do full blast because after 30, it really starts. 30 is always the mark when the lactic acid starts, right? Press more out, and 10 seconds to go to the next exercise, do the same thing. And we would do that three times with a minute break. So a 38 minute workout. And that was, and then later I started incorporating like a pushing pulling exercise, stamina, kicking a bag, pushing pulling, stamina, you know. So every time two different muscle groups, so you could go full power all the time, and with a stamina exercise in between. And that was it. And then that, I think, made us just super strong. We tried to do always more than 25 repetitions.
Yeah, before you said you ran out of gas and those were the fights that you lost, like, did you just go out too hard on those fights and then kind of like go out too hard, too fast, and then fall off early? Or were they just simply in better shape than you, but you were also in good condition at the time?
Oh, no. In the Thai boxing, I was, I had no control. I was a hothead. You know, I get hit. I think it was also I pick up negativity from people and everything. So, and the crowd is a different crowd there. Every punch, when you see me making a punch in my Thai boxing matches, my face is like, you know, I'm trying to kill the guy.
Yeah.
And so I just shut everything out. I just blew up. I got fast twitch fibers. I better get really good stamina. Even, the one time I gave a day, I was at the police station and they allowed me a day before. Plus, I had an infected testicle, like a huge freaking thing that was hurting and that was killing me. I had to say, I'm not kidding. This is the crazy thing.
How did your testicle get infected?
I don't know. There was there's a bunch of guys, people had it. There was apparently something that was in the air. And it was not only my friends. It's not like
that's what I'd say too. My wife.
It was not because we shared fluids.
In the air.
But you know what happened when I came to Japan? Yeah. Everybody was so calm, and that calmed me down. And in Japan, I realized when I arrived there, there were no rounds. I thought it were going to be rounds.
It's for pride.
This is for pancreas.
Okay.
And they say, I said, okay. So I see. My opponent is 245 pounds. I'm like 200 pounds at the time. I go like, there's no weight classes. And they go, no, there's no weight classes. I go, okay, cool. I said, how many rounds we got? One. Great. How many minutes? 30. Great.
30 minutes.
Inside, I'm going, what the fuck? I go, oh my God. So I go to my manager. Can I talk to you for a second? You know, what's going on here? So I put these R's on my hand that stand for rustig. in Holland, but coincidentally, it starts with the same as relax. It's the same word. Mm. So my corner, I never had a corner. I'm a manager there. I never had somebody to train me, so I'm there. The only thing you hear him say is, when I get hit, stay calm, right. You'll get him back, breathe. You know, that was the only instruction I needed the whole time. Mm. But for some reason, when I started fighting in Japan, it was like I was so calm and calculated and relaxed. When I went back the next month, I had already a fight the next month. They gave me the magazines from the first one, and you see me like he gives me a kick to the body. You see me just standing with my face relaxed. I'm hitting him, my face is relaxed, and I go, "Wow, I was a totally different person." And I think it's because of the crowd; they're so quiet. They actually know and understand that the person in there is the guy who knows it and not them. You know? The rest of the world, it's a different story.
Punch him in the face. Yeah, I thought about that. Yeah. Oh, that was on my list.
Put your shit in his eye.
Yeah, I heard the stupidest things, man. It's so crazy.
So you were talking about getting in a lot of fights outside the ring as well, and you kind of have like your famous fight that you mentioned on the Joe Rogan podcast where you fought with a multiple bouncers. Can you kind of tell the audience briefly about that fight?
Was that the toughest bar fight you've had?
It was because it got scary at the end. It really got because I'm
as if a normal bar fight's not scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you got one guy, it takes about 0.2 seconds, right? You only have to connect and it's over. Right. You know, I mean, that's these people on the street that come that are non-fighters. It's like me coming to Kobe Bryant and say, "Hey, let's shoot some hoops together, man." Sure. Yeah, guess who's gonna win? Right. You know, we're doing this our whole lives. So, you know, and this guy with karate, whatever he does, is not gonna do it. And there's no disrespect to karate. I have my second degree in there and a second degree in taekwondo as well. It's just not fighting. Mm-hmm. You know, or you got to do like the Kyokushin guys.
Yeah,
you know, who also compete in Thai boxing, you know, and like George St. Pierre, and there's some guys out there who actually do it. So,
sure. I heard you got your one level up. You got, I want to say, your fifth degree black belt in karate after you broke someone's shin doing an inverted heel hook. Is that real?
That's real. Yeah, because I walked on the street the day before the fight. That was still early in my career.
Yeah,
and we hear a big voice going, "Hybrid wrestling, Pancras," and that was the preview for the show next week. So we looked to the side, and there is this giant screen, right? Yeah. And the first thing we see is me knocking out a dude. The guy, my first fight, the guy go, "Yay!" He's so watching. And there's this one moment, and John Blooming, he's the 10th degree Kyokushin, the highest one in Europe under Masuyama. Mm-hmm. And he was standing next to me, and I see this guy in this half guard, and the leg is over. He grabs the heel and he falls back, and I go, "Oh!" I said, I look at him, I said, "That's a cool move," you know. So the next day I'm in the fight and I happen to be in that position. So I go, "Oh, might as well try it." So I grabbed the foot, but since I never did it, I had no clue what kind of force I would put on this guy. So I locked it up and I let my body drop backwards, and we heard a snap. Now normally it's the knee that gives up because you rotate your lower leg.
Right.
And you flip it 90 degrees to the side. So he stands up and he feels his knee, and the referee, you know, he grabs the rope, you know, it was a rope escape, and he feels his knee, and he goes, no, it's okay, I can't fight. And I go, that was weird because I heard it pop, you know, because you see me go pop and I let go. Then we start again, and he kicks me with his leg. I always just take the kicks, you know, put my foot flat down, and he hits the inside of my thigh, and then when he puts his foot down, you see the leg bone. Yeah, so what happened, the first thing what happened was his shin bone went half, and I think it was still a little attached, and when it kicked, he finished it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only one that I felt really, pretty much really bad about.
Because, felt bad about that, yeah?
Yeah, he was 13 months out. He was 8 months in the hospital, got an infection in there. I went to look him up, man. I felt so horrible. Poor guy. Yeah.
So how did the bar fight in Sweden?
Was it Sweden? we're just minding our
important stuff.
No, it's just, you know, I'm always a happy drunk. So I'm just jumping around. I have to say this to set this up because it's always fun to hear. My wife doesn't think it is, but I talked to my wife just before the bar fight happens, and I'm already drunk, and she goes, "Oh, you having fun? You having fun?" I say, "Oh, yeah, no. You're there with two Swedish blonde girls, right?" I said, "Don't worry about it. I'm just having a good time." Okay.
So I know that drill.
We go in the bar. And And suddenly I'm jumping around doing crazy stuff. I'm with a guy, and then I was drunk and I wanted to drag from a cigarette for some reason. And I see a guy walking with a cigarette. He holds it up like this, and I go, bloop. He says, no. He says, it's my cigarette. I said, oh, wait. He said, give it back. So I gave him like $5. I said, he said, no, walk with me and I'll get you another cigarette. Later I realized, there's something in that cigarette, of course, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So I walk with the guy, he orders a drink for me, and we're standing there, boom, the bouncers are on me. And they grab me, they pull me through a big door, there's a big marble fire escape going down the stairs. And right away, a little guy in front of me with a big guy behind him, and he started to me, you did this. I said, okay, I'm leaving, don't worry, don't touch me. You know, I'm no problem, I will leave, tell me where to go, I don't want any trouble. He says, listen, my boomer, I said, listen, I told you before, don't touch me, I'm going to go. I don't want any trouble. Can you do me a favor, though? I got my buddy here, he's from Holland also. He has no clue where I am, he's also bald. You'll recognize him, can you tell him that I'm leaving? So right away when I want to leave the fire stairs, the big guy jumps over me and he puts a finger in my eye. I go, dude, guys, I don't want any trouble. Fuck, in my other eye. Mm. And that's when I knocked him out. Then all hell broke loose because they had these little microphones. They called the other bouncers, you know, and everybody's coming. And that's when the big fight started, man. It was crazy. And I dropped, because the one guy I dropped first, he was out. I thought he's not going to stand. I saw his face swell up in seconds. It was really weird, everything. I heard his voice over the music. And then the other guy comes. I pulled the jacket, I believe, over him because he was wearing a leather jacket. I started kneeing him. And then other. But what happens, you knock this guy out, but they all wake up again, you know? And now they're more angry. So you keep fighting. And I was in good shape, right. But I go, you start thinking while you're going down, I go, this is a fire stairs, I gotta go down because I can get out there, you know? Right. Because eventually I'm gonna lose this, you know? These guys keep coming back. And it's like I told on the Joe Rogan podcast, I still don't know where it is. I hope somebody makes a picture of it one time. Maybe a Swede, they will do me this favor. In the wall was a piece in the wall, and a hole, but you know, nice. It was made for it, and there were broomsticks there. Mm-hmm. And it was standing behind a little fence, but you could pick him out like that. Yeah. And I'm fighting, boom, and I lose my balance, and I'm standing here. And I grab a stick, and I pull it out, but then I think, no, because if I do, they got to grab one, right. You know? And I keep going. And while I keep going, I heard the sound from these freaking sticks coming out. They all grab one. I go, no, you know, I got hit over the head with this thing, bro. Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. So finally I came down, and, you know, I mean, it was crazy. And I grabbed, I really remember exactly how it looked. It was one of those clip things, the copper set. Clip, and it's closed. Mm. And I'm turning around, and there they are. And I go, okay, now I'm going to slap fucking ice, you know? I'm going to kick the ball. I'm going to go to town, you know, really do some damage. And at the moment I look at them, everybody, they all step back, and I go, fuck, cool, they can see I mean business. But behind me was the whole police force. And that's why they stepped back. I wasn't cool at all. And then the police arrested me because apparently one of those guys was a cop. So I knocked out a cop.
Yeah.
You know, and that became a big problem. Then I went to jail. They didn't let me make my phone call. The next day they let me make my phone call. They brought me to a different jail, which was like in a mountain, really weird. You know, you go in an elevator, two stories up, you go out, three up, then you go four down in a different one. Mm. I go, dude, I'm never going to come out here. This is crazy. But all these guards, they were fans. So they, I had right away a VCR, they can bring me coffee. Yeah. I mean, they were sitting in my cell, if talking to me, you, having fun.
If they didn't know you, you would have never left there.
But you listen, I got the lawyer coming, the lawyer, and he said, I said, so when I get out, I got to do a seminar tomorrow. He says, oh, you're going to be here 6 to 9 months. I said, excuse me, what was that? Yeah, yeah. 6 to 9 months. He said, you knocked out a cop. I said, he never told me it was a cop. You know, yeah, I mean, just attacking a guy who's attacking me, right?
Sure.
I mean, so I'm there, make the first phone call. Called my wife. She said, of course, she's freaking out now by this time. I go, honey, relax. I'm good. I say, got some good and bad news. What do you want to hear first? And she says, the good news. I say, I did a fuck two Swedish girls. What is the bad news? I say, I'm in jail. She goes, you think that is funny? So I had to do it. All the guards laughing, you know. Right. And that was it. And then my friends, thankfully, had a good friend in Sweden. They had a good talk. with the bouncers, and they drew back the charges. And then in court, I went to court, and they said, "Hope, get out of the country and don't come back." I actually came back 2 months later because I felt so bad. All the people came there from all of Scandinavia for the seminar. Mm. So I told them, "Listen, I'm going to come back. I'm going to do it for free. You don't have to pay anything, and this one is going to be on me." So we went back, and then after the place was called the Spy Bar. After the seminar, I said, "Okay, guys, tonight, 9 o'clock, everybody at Spy Bar." No. You know what? And later, I just got an email about 6 months ago. The main guy from that bar. Mm-hmm. Worked for somebody, and they literally were instructed to do those kind of things. They had famous people. He was apparently was crying on TV, famous people for 4 years in jail who were innocent, and they just all said they weren't. And that was, I can see. And when I did this also, I had the whole Swedish Stockholm, everybody was behind me because they knew that bar was always, they called them the mafia bouncers. Everybody got beat up there all the time. But it was scary. It was scary. Now it's, you know, it's fun because I came out alive, but it was really scary. At the end, I go, "What am I?" You know, the guy who took my eye out and I knocked him out. Yeah. I mean, every time during the fight, he was still going for my eyes. So yeah. I go, "There's other moments that you think, shall I play like I'm knocked out? No, because that guy's going to take my eyes out, you know? Right. You know, there's so much going through your head so fast. Yeah. It's the wildest thing, you know? A lot of decisions in a very short amount of time.
Is that what inspired you to make your bar fighting?
No, I did that before. Listen, DVDs. Oh, dude, I have on my phone, I have a newspaper article from the cover of the Swedish Post, I believe, and it says, "Dirty Rutan fights" or something, and then it's a picture of my street fighting DVD, and then the bouncer saying, "We were happy the police came because they couldn't handle me," and then the roof, my freaking sales shut up. I go, "This is freaking awesome," you know. But that's later again. It was not fun at the time, you know. It's you got to check it out.
Like I said, if you guys have some time to kill on YouTube and you look up bosses, call them self-defense techniques,
right,
or
boss root and bar fight.
Boss root
that.
And bar fights. Yeah. Oh my God.
This is the.
You know, is this down a little bit?
There's the whole article they put out there.
You also made a TV show out of that later where you...
Punk Payback. We did that. I actually thought people would like it more, but they changed it also in mid-season to a different day. But the people who are watching it, you know, and Canada was a big hit in Australia, I believe, that they said. It was. I thought it was hilarious. It was non-scripted.
Essentially, took videos of people getting beat up in different scenarios or something, and then he went through the exact scenario and showed people, "This is how I would have defended it."
Oh, really?
And
uh-huh.
Stuff like that. Just like, "Here, I should have kneed him in the nuts here," and he just gouged his eye there and stuff. And
it's hilarious. Like they really hijack a van. I said, "Okay, this is what you do." You know.
So they put Boss in a van and he beats somebody up, trying to hijack him and stuff. It's really funny.
I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. But I always laugh about my own shit. My wife. Sometimes my wife, I can laugh like 8 or 9 times. I'm sitting in the office and she's in the kitchen and suddenly I start laughing again and she goes, "Are you still laughing about the same joke?" You know, I think a lot of stuff is funny. I have just a good time with pretty much anything.
Cool. All right, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the tools you're using to train.
Okay.
Cool. All right.
And we're back. We're here with Dr. Andy Galpin and Boss Rutan.
Rutan Tutan.
Former UFC champion. And, we were just playing around with Andy's got a new toy. He's got this thing to measure the force and power. What exactly is it measuring? I'll let you tell us.
It's essentially a punching bag with a load cell built into it. So I can measure reaction time, force impacts, units of destruction is what they call them. How hard you're hitting something is essentially what it is. Mm-hmm. So it's actually custom made. We actually have the first and only one out, so it's brand new. You'll never see it anywhere else.
You think as long as boxing and kickboxing have been around, someone would have made something like this before? It's a big pad with some device in it that measures how hard you can hit.
Yeah, it's not that complicated.
It's not the arcade, man.
I kicked a crash test dummy once.
Oh yeah,
National Geographic. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah, but that's again, that's a crash test dummy. This is a thing, a portable thing that you can bring everywhere. Yeah. Crash test dummy is hard. I mean, it's like 150-pound little. You know, it was hurting.
Didn't you break it too?
No, I kicked it off the charts. Yeah. They didn't go higher than a VC value one because that if a car would hit a one, that means that car is unsafe.
Yeah.
And the record there at the moment was like 0.78 or something was the record. And then I say just a computer and hit a 2.1. So that was cool. I tripled.
So I would. It'd be better for me to get in a head-on collision than in a car than with your shin.
That's what they said. Yeah. 30, yeah. He says it's like a 70-mile-per-hour hitting a solid wall. That's the impact. Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
They measured a lot of really similar things on that sports science show that was on a few years back.
Yeah,
I don't know if still running or not?
Yeah, no, it's on ESPN now.
Okay.
The difference is they have like $100,000 a day budget, and that's just not practical for anybody besides them. And as Boss mentioned, it's literally built into a kickboxing tie pad, basically. So it gives you instantaneous feedback and whatnot. It's a good training device. But we actually care about it because we're doing some cool research with it. That's the idea, is we're going to try to... Oh, here we go. CCP, you can see it right there. And so there's a nice little...
target?
Yeah, there's a target to hit. So what we're actually doing is... we're working with... this new little product right here, Radius Wrap, and it's essentially to be put in front of the hand. So when you strike, actually, the idea is it should put less force and injury back into your hand. And so we're going
to
do some tests.
Be less likely to break your hand is the
less likely to break your hand. There. Yeah, roll your wrist, whatever it happens to be. But like anything, we're not going to sell it until we get some science behind it.
And so, Ryan was describing how it doesn't go across the knuckles. It actually goes right below the knuckles.
Yeah, it goes below. So it actually was Boss was showing, it sort of gets their fingers out of the way.
I really like it a lot because I always say, normally when you have a wrap, you're holding something. And you see the fist is not straight anymore. So first the impact comes on this, and then it comes on the knuckle.
Right.
And you don't have that problem anymore because it is here. Plus, all the wives are going to be happy. You can keep wearing your wedding ring. You know, normally I could never do that. When
he said it was important. Yeah.
To me, it's important. My wife, behind every good man, they say is a good wife. I really, I'm a really blessed guy. Right. Trust me.
Yeah. So this is, for the record, this is not my product. I get no share in this thing. But we were approached by Ryan Parsons, who's developed this project over there. And so we just wanted to see the science on it, is what's going on in the hand. So we're just going to do some cool science. There's nothing on, no science on fighters or contact sports really of any kind. So we're making the headway there, and we're starting with this.
It's not quite as easy to measure it as something like CrossFit, where it's like, well, if I can squat 400 and you can squat 500, you're obviously stronger than me.
Right.
Like there's a lot of talk about this guy hits really hard and that guy hits really hard, but there's really no quantifiable data behind it.
Yeah, there are some stuff out there, but it's all, I would say, non-reliable. Mm-hmm. Or reliability is questioned of it. We're not sure how accurate the measurements are and stuff. And I think it's just sort of the evolution of bringing science to application again with MMA sports specifically.
Do you see like the pad coming into like the average MMA gym? And so they can like say, hey, you know, you're punching like this, you're a pussy. Punch like this, and it'll be nice and hard.
Yeah, I think it's a training device for sure, a teaching device. But I think it's everything you wished you ever had in a punching bag. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to tell if you're slowing down, which is really important. It's actually sort of something that Doug turned me on to years ago is actually Boss's old audio tapes you make.
The thing
I loved about him the most. I still use the hell out of
all three of us. Did.
You know what I'm talking about? You got kickboxing, one boxing.
Boss was an MMA workout.
The combos, you build the combos up.
Essentially, what they are, they're like 2 or 3 minute rounds where you just sit there. Boss calls out the combos and you throw them. But the thing I like about him is Boss talks the entire time about throw every punch as hard as you can. Mm-hmm. Right, and so the idea is to actually train like you're going to fight. So coming back to this point, that's really easy now when you can actually measure how hard are you punching. So if you're standing there shadow boxing, you're like, I'm really punching hard. It's like, well, every time you hit, I see exactly how hard you're throwing that punch.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the reaction time as well. So that's great. The great thing about this is like, I did a bunch of stuff for National Geographic. And then one time you kick a crash test dummy, then you kick a bag, then you kick, you know, but it's all different sensors.
Right.
This is all the same.
Yep.
So now if you have a guy, because I had like Gina Carano, she hit more pounds than Boss was hitting. That was like 2 years ago in a different bag.
Well, that's because she's way better looking than you.
Just
give her the credit.
We actually know Gina very well.
I know Gina. Gina's great.
She was
freaking awesome.
She was in their gym one time. and that was pretty awesome.
That was pretty awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So oh my God, did you guys flash you? Please.
Yes, she did. She flashed me. That's a true story.
You were walking out the door, and she was just like, woo.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I was on that stage when the towel dropped. Remember that?
Oh,
part?
Yeah.
You know, she was standing there naked, and then her father dropped the towel, like, woo. Everybody was like, yeah.
This was actually the first, I think it was Elite XC, the first show they did. This was when Kenzo fought. No, this was the first one.
The very first one they did on Showtime, yeah.
Kenzo fought Frank. That was the one where Frank kneed him in the back of the head like 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was in Memphis.
But it was that show when the towel dropped. I think when the towel dropped was Kimbo was fighting, I think.
Kimbo
Slice. Was going to fight Ken, but that didn't happen. And it got a whole...
Kimbo was actually one of your guys, right?
Yeah, you trained Kimbo, right?
Yeah, I trained him, yeah.
Yeah, there's also some cool videos of Kimbo Slice street fighting. And it was like the first time they brought, well, I don't know if it was the first time, but they basically this guy was nothing but a street fighter, like knocking people's eyeballs out. And then they were like, well, just put him in a cage. And you took him on.
I took him on first. I had to go out of the country for like 2 months, so I sent him to Sean Tompkins, our friend who passed away.
Sure.
And he started training him. I came back after 2 months, and then we started training him here 2 times a day. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the beginning, he picked up so fast. He was really busy with it. Mm-hmm. But it was this thing. It became too big for him, I think. Like ESPN cover, this, boom, everybody, you know. Fair and enough, calling him a champ. I said, don't call him a champ. You know that he's got to, you know. But he did really well. You know, he did escapes that we showed him. I mean, for a guy who never trained, and his boxing was good, that was already good. He was a hard hitter, you know, and a good heart. So, and a good guy, man. Those were really fun times. Those guys, Icy Mike, his manager, and then the group around him, his entourage, they're hilarious. We would go in a hotel room, put 4 TV sets together, like on all sides. Everybody play video games against each other. They would go to Best Buy in Florida when they were somewhere else just to buy the video game and the flat screen if they needed to. You know, it was hilarious. Yeah, that's good. Everywhere we came, he got stopped. Like in Best Buy, we couldn't walk anywhere, and Kimbo got stopped by people.
Yeah, that's sort of funny. I remember actually. So Doug and I think you were with me. We were at the Arnold Classic. You know the show.
I was there also.
And I remember going there, and you know how they have the big lines for the UFC fighters. And actually, I can't remember. Maybe you were there, but there was a huge line to see like, I don't know, like somebody, Brock or something like that. And I walk around the corner, and you're standing next to Don Fry. And it's like you and Don Fry talking to each other. And there's like a 5-hour line to meet Brock Lesnar. And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm going over here. Like,
there you go.
And I stood there talking to him, like, right? And just people had no idea sort of who you were. And but everyone knew sort of Brock. And I cleaned house that day. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah. But it's fun. It's fun because you see the progress. Then later on, you know what happens at other shows. And then you go like, oh, thank God. And then they didn't forget me. Right. It's good that I stayed in the TV, in the commentating.
Are you still training many fighters?
No, here at the gym we have a bunch of guys, and a good friend of mine, Jens Gauss from Denmark, he started at 38 years old, was a powerlifter, came in, and I told him, okay, you got to lose all that weight, because this is stupid weight, you know, you're going to be a little clumsy. He lost 50 pounds.
Stupid weight and a smart weight, right?
Yeah. That's it, you know, speed, he needs speed, stamina. All my guys, I say, stamina is the most important thing. You know, of course you need technique, but even more stamina, because stamina is going to give you heart, going to give you endurance, gives you everything. It's the level of when the level is really close between two teams or two guys or two whoever, the guy with the most stamina, person with the most stamina is going to win. Yeah. You know, can keep pushing the action, and that's the trick.
Well, if you have more stamina, you can practice more high quality reps in the gym too. I mean, that's a big crossover. Like, if you have more stamina, you'll have better technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when I started the first part, when I said after an asthma attack I would run, I would break my running times in Holland with my track and field, and I could never understand why that was. I thought maybe it was the cortisones they gave me. I had no clue what was going on, and then I went to a doctor's office. I saw a pair of lungs, a drawing of a pair of lungs on the wall, and I saw that the bronchiole is infected. Mm-hmm. You know, and that the lungs have to pull that air through that infection
through that small hole.
To that small hole, and I go, oh man, that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, my lungs have been working 7-10 days to pull that air through. Then when the infection is gone, I run. around, it's so much easier to run. Why don't I come up with something that controls the air intake?
A little bit of an adaptation there.
And that's when I came up with crazy stuff, little coins from like France. They had coins with holes in them, you know, and I would put them in my mouth and try to breathe through my eyes. It's like super dangerous.
Sounds really safe.
That's what I said. So I stopped doing that, but it was always in my head. It was called the routinizer, we call it. All my buddies here.
How'd you die? I used the routinizer.
And when Wanderlei Silva was on TV working out with a snorkel, my phone went crazy. I had like 6-7 phone calls from my buddies, and they said, dude, you got to make that thing because somebody's going to come up with it. And that's when I came up with the O2 trainer. And it's really an amazing thing because I have a medical company now buying 100 a month, and these are going to asthma patients. Oh. And you use the O2 trainer 7 to 10 days, you won't use your inhaler anymore. And medically, I can't prove it yet because I don't have the money to back that up to make a study of that. But you can read all the signs, all the reviews on the website. Every single person that works out with it, whether you use it once every while. I haven't used my inhaler for 8 months, and you have to understand, I use my inhaler my entire life. Entire life. If I would sneeze 3 times really hard, my lung would close up, I needed to spray it open. Before a fight, I would use it just to make sure to spray it open. You know. And now I had nothing. I don't even have it in my car anymore. I can just start sprinting on the treadmill, and I don't have asthma. It's the craziest thing.
So the O2 trainer is training your respiratory muscles to get stronger, just like you would train your legs or your arms to get stronger by doing kind of like resistance training?
Resistance training, and it's the inspiratory muscles only. There's other lung training devices out there that control air in and out. And what I realized is when you control air out and you're getting tired, you're not completely emptying your lungs because you want new air. You need new air. So then you're kind of breathing like high in the chest. And
you're
shallow. I want to completely empty your lungs, out, and now you use way more of your inspiratory system. And I think that really was the trick. I think that's why I got the patent also, because the other ones, you know, I did the patent and I realized nobody did it. So
you mentioned, I'm not sure if this is true in CrossFitters, is that fairly popular to use the masks or the snorkel or anything like that?
I know some guys that use gas masks. And how is that different than like just wearing a gas mask?
It's control air in and out. You know, it's probably the training mask. And they control the air in and they control the air out. And I only control air in. And people go, okay, do you get bigger lungs? I said, you're born with your set of lungs. You know, they're this big. You can make it bigger. There's some things you can lung stacking. There's certain ways to expand them a little bit more. But what the O2 trainer does, it gives you more power. It gives you more volume, more in and out and faster. And so that's
right. You're not looking to train the ability of the lungs to process oxygen. This is more about the muscles that help, you know, expand your rib cage. And
that's it. You know, what a lot of people don't know is like the lungs are just the back, and there's a space between the lungs and the body. And if you breathe in, it creates a vacuum, and that sucks open the lungs, and that goes super lightning fast. But it's all, your lung muscles, they work also, but it's really all your core and diaphragm doing it. So the bigger the breaths you can take, the better you train your lungs, of course.
So is this something that you would use during training, like while you were running on the treadmill or while you're lifting weights?
That's it. And you know, and the thing is to use it smart, like, because we had with the crazy guys, all the guys who want to go too fast, don't do that, because then you don't give your body too much enough oxygen. That's why high altitude training is a little less now, because you don't get a good workout anymore, because you're slowing your brain down. Your body doesn't get oxygen. It's bad for you.
That's where I was going to go next. When we look at we have enough science on the whether it be the mask training or the live high or the altitude training, it just doesn't work. And the real issue is exactly what Boss just said, is it compromises training quality. So you can't run hard, you can't train fast. It's a problem. So we now know that's the exact opposite of what you want to do. And so the thing that people don't really realize is there are those little muscles in between your ribs. They're called intercostal muscles. They actually contract and pull your ribs open. And that's exactly what Boss was talking about. That allows the volume of your lungs to increase, so the pressure goes down. And so when you open your mouth, there's greater pressure outside than there is inside, so air comes rushing in. So, and also as Boss mentioned, we don't see lung values change with exercise training at all. Certainly not with the masks. And so Boss's question is, if we actually train the lungs with some resistance, but not compromise total volume of air by letting you get a full breath out, that should allow you to keep your training quality high, but actually train the inspiratory muscles, but we're not sure yet, so that's why we're gonna.
You know, I'm on the treadmill, and like after, if I do it, my heart rate will go up way higher because I can measure it, and I'm sweating like crazy. So you, these muscles, they're going to have a really hard workout. Mm. As soon as I say, okay, this is enough rounds, and I start running, it's much easier. Mm. You know, so it is. I wouldn't train every day with it. You know, although I think if you do it the correct way, you can train every day with it. Right. What you want to do is this: you run on the treadmill, for instance, you do your incline sprints, you feel like good. Then you take the O2 trainer, you put the hole on there that's on there that comes with it, and train with that. Mm. And then only when you start feeling that you have the same amount air that you get in your lungs as you had without the O2 trainer, that means now your lungs are stronger. You know, they know how to pull the same amount of air in. Now you go to cap number one. They have a number on them. Cap number one has a hole 1 millimeter smaller, and that's it.
If we can see what this looks like, I think it would help out for people trying. Hand.
It magically appears in my hand. This is the other thing. Very simple device. It comes with a nose clip. I don't use a nose clip. I simply don't breathe in through my nose. My friend goes, yeah, but then you can cheat. I said, then you're cheating the person, the only person in the world you shouldn't cheat, yourself. Right. You know, so good for you. This is 14. Needless to say, with this one, you can't train. But if you don't have time to train, you can use this at home, sitting on the back, or wherever, you know, and you can do breathing exercises.
Not when you're driving, right, boss?
Don't do it when you drive. Don't do it when you drive. Look, and here we go. This is the cap that comes on it. Mm. And then we go down. This is cap number 3. That's all little numbers. And it goes, and also this, the silicone is a little, if you see this, it moves. And I did that on purpose. I didn't make it hard because now if you breathe harder, it will actually open a little bit more because it's flexible. Mm. The flap also, here, a lot of people, the flap should, here. This is a flap. This flap needs to be from a harder material than this cap is. So they can't make it in one piece. Some people pull it out for some reason. I have no clue why they pull it out. But don't do that. Just leave it in, and you don't need to change this cap. Because if I make this from the same material, you're going to suck it in. So that's why this is the same hardness. That is. Everything is thought about. That's what I'm trying to say.
Don't bastardize his equipment, please.
No, people go like, they grab it, and they say, hey, they pull the flap, and they pull it out. I go, why would you even do that? Why would you even do that? Yeah. I can put it on in 5 seconds, you know, but, you know, because it's simple. It's got two holes, and it goes on two little pins, and you push it in and it's on. But apparently it creates a lot of problems.
Yeah. So how often do you recommend that we use that?
You know, I do it every workout because I do it the way you're supposed to do it. And only when I start feeling that, you know, I get enough air again, then I go to the next level, you know, and go slowly, slowly, steady. Like the running drills, I can do, for instance, I do with the 3. I can do my workout with 10-pound ankle weights and upper body rotations. I don't hit right now because of my neck surgery, but I do it really powerful. I make, instead of a 4 punch, I rotate 4 times extremely hard and explosive. I can do it with screen number 6, and sometimes I can push it to screen number 7. You see, so every workout is a little different. If you run, they have a different. That's another different workout. On the bike, you probably also have can do a smaller hole, and with running and jogging. Mm-hmm. But hill sprints, you know, that is always. I like hill sprints the most because they really kill you.
I like hill sprints are where it's at for sure. You were talking about you have some joint pain. And we were talking a little bit earlier, and you went down to Panama to get some stem cells.
Yes.
Stem cell stuff. I don't even know what it is.
I know.
Tell us about it.
I know a famous guy, and I don't want to use his name, but he has a father who was 93 years old, and they sent him to the Mayo Clinic in Arizona because he was going to die. Everybody was kind to the family. It's a big family. They wanted to say goodbye to him, and they said, you know what? Somebody was there, apparently, and said, let's send him to Panama for the stem cell. This guy just turned 95, and he just walks around. Sometimes he uses his walker, but he couldn't do that before. He was in a wheelchair, you know. So it changed his life. He even gets some new little tiny hair starts growing back. 95 years old.
No way.
So I heard that story. And then the doctor that I know went, and then the sister of the famous guy went. I saw her 6-8 weeks later. She looked younger. She said, oh my God, I have like energy coming out of my fingers. I went, and I had that feeling also. But now every time when I eat, and I'm going to ask her, I'm going to call her later after this interview. I said, is it after you eat, you get extreme lot of energy? Like in the morning I wake up and it's almost like I can throw a powerball. Whoop. It's like, like even when I do this now, I feel boop,
You can.
So it's doing something. It's doing something. I can do already like 8 more reps with one arm, which was for me, you know, I started with 6 reps for 5 pounds. Can you imagine that? And then I went up to 18. Now, last time I did 26.
Why are you having problems? What happened with your arm?
I had 2 neck surgeries. C5, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are fused. And of course the ones above and below, they said, you know, they kind of need help too. So the fusion was good, but apparently I've also arthritis on one side. So that closes that space again, you know. So everything they said in with the stem cells could actually help that. I got my knees shut up, my neck shut up, and then they give it intravenous.
Your knees have been, they've blown up and stuff, is what you were saying.
Yeah, I have no cartilage in the kneecaps. And everybody, you know, who not really knows that's the worst problem in a knee you can have. It's the only thing they can't replace.
I can verify that.
And because everywhere you come, people go, oh, you know, put the synthetic skin, put the stuff in. I say, yeah, okay, I have this for 7 years. You don't think I tried everything? I went to see the best doctors. I went to Alan Trash here at the Cullen Jope. And he goes, and what he tells me, he says, oh, we can put your shin bone forward, and that will take the pressure off the kneecap.
They told me the same thing.
I go, are you out of your fucking mind? Sure. He started laughing. I said, what are you laughing? He said, oh, normally they don't talk like that. It was funny. You know, he was laughing about it. I said, what does it take? He says, three or four months in a cast, and then 3 or 4 months rehab for each leg. And that's when I said, are you out of your mind?
Jeez. So you went down to Panama. You had to leave the country because you just can't do that stuff in the U.S.
You can, because it's. I think it cures. The things I see there, it cures. And then the whole medical company goes down. You
the
know,
whole so. System would collapse if we could cure people.
Yeah. So, but I saw a kid with a cerebral palsy who was father, you know, he was before me because they pick up every day in person. And he was every day in front of me. And the kid was a kid, you know, reacting to me. Miles, he was his name. Miles, but he called him Miles. He came in as a board, stiff as a board. You know, you have either that or you're really loose. And he was the stiffness. And the father said that 12 months ago, they gave him the shots. And like pretty much after the first shot right away, he started relaxing. Now, he works in China. And when he went back to the States, they retested the kid. The doctors almost refused to believe it was the same kid. Mm. I mean, brain activity, he reacts to people. Now, he was totally cut off. And he was there now to get an extra boost. And his father had a knee problem. He says, I'm going to try it out now too. Everybody is a believer suddenly.
Yeah, man.
So a lifetime of fighting leads to some pretty awesome stories, but overall, you got some nasty problems damn near over your whole body.
You know, this is what I did. Nowadays, guys are training much, much smarter. Mm-hmm. I thought always, the harder I go here, the easier it's going to go there. And I know everybody says that, but listen, we tried to knock each other out, and we got good strikers in Holland. You know, we got the freaking Peter Ehrs and all these guys that tried to get hit by that, or he's who I was training with his leg kicks, you know?
God.
I tried to survive those things, you know. It's a lot of power.
That's a good way to put it, survive.
You know, and so I went just crazy. We went hard and hard and hard. And the neck, it was a stupid thing that I did for a TV show for my good friend Holt McKellen. He had that show Lights Out, the boxing show, remember, on FX?
Yeah.
There was this fight scene in with me, him and I. He said, I cannot beat Buzz up, you know, because that would be stupid. Something needs to be happening. I go like, it's so dumb what I said. I said, what about this? I jump to put a rear naked choke, forget to put the hooks in, I slide off, spike myself, I'm dizzy.
That's a great idea.
Oh, man. And when I saw it, because I realized I had no power under my arm, when I saw the TV show, I go, oh, that's it. That was the reason it happened.
Oh,
you know,
man.
I told him, I said, I'm going to do this once, because obviously this is not a smart thing to do. Oh, you know, if you could turn back time, right? But you can.
I've said that a dozen times at least.
Yeah. Can only learn.
What was it, when you went down there, you spent, 4 days getting treatment? What's the treatment look like?
The treatment is like you get, it's nothing. It's like literally you go in, they take your blood, they tell you everything you want to know about it, and you're gone. Then they spin out, I think, get the proteins or whatever they want to combine it with. And they get the umbilical cords from babies. And those stem cells they use because they don't have receptors on them yet. They're just blank cells. They go inside your body and then they become your own. So they spin it in that stuff. Then the next day you come back, that's when I get my knees injected and they do intravenous also.
So they inject your own blood back into you?
Yeah, but you know, it's a yellow substance. You know, you always
kind of like
take
a
red.
Plasma type.
Yeah, it's like a plasma.
Yeah.
And then the day after, 6 or 7 trigger points in my neck, and intravenous, and then the third one was intravenous. And that one, I really, after that, I felt the glowing. I go, whoa, I get the glow from The Last Dragon. You are the last dragon, remember? You will have the power of the glow. And then the guy hits him, and he goes, and he stops and he starts glowing, and he goes, I am the strongest. You really felt like that. Sure enough. I met Taimak, actually, who plays Bruce Leroy. He's a good guy.
Cool. All right, let's wrap this up.
Do it.
Anything you want to promote specifically? Your gym?
Yeah, of course. Elite MMA Gym. Every Friday night, guys, you have live on Access TV. We have Inside MMA. We just had our 300th show, like 5 shows ago. So we're already 6 years. We get the highest ratings on the network. It's a really fun show. It's about mixed martial arts around the world, not only focused on the UFC, about everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's a great show.
That's the only show dedicated only to MMA, right?
To MMA, yeah, pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say the body action system. It's a punch-kicking device that I developed, and it's really good. You won't break it. People go like, oh, but it's so much money. You're not going to break it. You know, a bag, how many bags you need every time, $200 bag, and they break them. This thing, you're not going to break it. I didn't break it. I'm still on my... in my backyard, there's actually standing one. It has a little slice here opening in the face because there was... 3 years ago, and I'm kicking the head, you know, so it's a great thing. You don't get impact on your joints, so it's a great tool for fighters. Like 2 weeks before a fight, forget about the back, let's use that thing, do the workout on the back. You get targets, solar plexus, liver shot, you know, it's shaped in the direction you have to hit, in the angle you have to hit the body shot. So it's bodyactionsystem.com. That's a cool little device.
And also that one.
And of course, yeah, the O2 Trainer, O2Trainer.com. And for people who don't know that the O is a zero, I took 02Trainer.com as well. So it get automatically forwarded. You know, O2TrainerBlog.com is a good one also, because then you can get pretty much see it, people talking about it. You get a lot of reviews. I have the special Air Forces Services. They wrote me that they were unbelievably happy with it. I have the sax player from the Eagles writing that he can play longer, stronger notes now.
Nice.
Pretty cool.
Cool stuff.
That's a testimony.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to go over to iTunes, look us up, give us 20 stars, positive review.
You let this guy promote anything?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah, he skipped right over you.
See, Andy and I are really good buddies, so I just forget about him. Yeah, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, definitely. So if you didn't pick it up, I'm the one that's actually working with Boss to do the studies on these types of things and the hand wraps and whatnot. So that's the type of stuff we do at Cal State Fullerton. So if you're interested in hanging out with Boss, come to our program.
And does this force plate have any, or this force pad rather, have a name to it?
It is the Strike Mate pad, I think, or something. It's not available.
Okay.
So you can't purchase it. But that's the type of work we do. So... if that's the type of stuff you want to get into in your master's program or something of the such, that's the type of stuff we do.
That's cool stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah. That would have been pretty cool to go to school doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. We try to have fun.
Excellent. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us, Boss.
Godspeed.
Dr. Galpin.
All right.
Thanks, fellas.
Party on.
All right.